The Golden Bough. A Study of Magic and Religion. By Sir James George Frazer. This audiobook was produced by Klaus-Dieter Mond, Rastatt, Germany and is published under the conditions of the Gutenberg Organization. Chapter 3. Sympathetic Magic. Section 2. Homeopathic or Imitative Magic. Part 3. Among the taboos observed by savages, none perhaps are more numerous or important than the prohibitions to eat certain foods, and of such prohibitions many are demonstrably derived from the law of similarity and are accordingly examples of negative magic. Just as the savage eats many animals or plants in order to acquire certain desirable qualities with which he believes them to be endowed, so he avoids eating many other animals and plants lest he should acquire certain undesirable qualities with which he believes them to be infected. In eating the former he practices positive magic. In abstaining from the latter he practices negative magic. Many examples of such positive magic will meet us later on. Here I will give a few instances of such negative magic or taboo. For example, in Madagascar, soldiers are forbidden to eat a number of foods lest on the principle of homeopathic magic they should be tainted by certain dangerous or undesirable properties which are supposed to inhere in these particular viands. Thus they may not taste hedgehog, as it is feared that this animal, from its propensity of coiling up into a ball when alarmed, will impart a timid shrinking disposition to those who partake of it. Again, no soldier should eat an ox knee, lest like an ox he should become weak in the knees and unable to march. Further, the warrior should be careful to avoid partaking of a cock that has died fighting or anything that has been speared to death. And no male animal may on any account be killed in his house while he is away at the wars. For it seems obvious that if you were to eat a cock that had died fighting, he would himself be slain on the field of battle. If he were to partake of an animal that had been speared, he would be speared himself. If a male animal were killed in his house during his absence, he would himself be killed in like manner and perhaps at the same instant. Further, the Malagasy soldier must eschew kidneys, because in the Malagasy language the word for kidney is the same as that for shot. So shot he would certainly be if he ate a kidney. The reader may have observed that in some of the foregoing examples of taboos the magical influence is supposed to operate at considerable distances. Thus among the Blackfeet Indians the wives and children of an eagle hunter are forbidden to use an owl during his absence, lest the eagles should scratch the distant husband and father. And again no male animal may be killed in the house of a Malagasy soldier while he is away at the wars, lest the killing of the animal should entail the killing of the man. This belief in the sympathetic influence exerted on each other by persons or things at a distance is of the essence of magic. Whatever doubts science may entertain as to the possibility of action at a distance, magic has none. Faith in telepathy is one of its first principles. A modern advocate of the influence of mind upon mind at a distance would have no difficulty in convincing a savage. The savage believed in it long ago, and what is more, he acted on his belief with a logical consistency such as his civilized brother in the faith has not yet, so far as I am aware, exhibited in his conduct. For the savage is convinced not only that magical ceremonies affect persons and things afar off, but that the simplest acts of daily life may do so too. Hence on important occasions the behavior of friends and relations at a distance is often regulated by a more or less elaborate code of rules, the neglect of which by the one set of persons would, it is supposed, entail misfortune or even death on the absent ones. In particular when a party of men are out hunting or fighting, their kinsfolk at home are often expected to do certain things or to abstain from doing certain others, for the sake of ensuring the safety and success of the distant hunters or warriors. I will now give some instances of this magical telepathy both in its positive and in its negative aspect. In Laos when an elephant hunter is starting for the chase, he warns his wife not to cut her hair or oil her body in his absence. For if she cut her hair the elephant would burst the oils, if she oiled herself it would slip through them. When a Dayak village has turned out to hunt wild pigs in the jungle, The people who stay at home may not touch oil or water with their hands during the absence of their friends. For if they did so, the hunters would all be butterfingered, and the prey would slip through their hands. Elephant hunters in East Africa believe that, if their wives prove unfaithful in their absence, this gives the elephant power over his pursuer, who will accordingly be killed or severely wounded. Hence if a hunter hears of his wife's misconduct, he abandons the chase and returns home. If a Wagogo hunter is unsuccessful, or is attacked by a lion, he attributes it to his wife's misbehavior at home, and returns to her in great wrath. While he is away hunting, she may not let anyone pass behind her or stand in front of her as she sits. And she must lie on her face in bed. The Moxis Indians of Bolivia thought that if a hunter's wife was unfaithful to him in his absence, he would be bitten by a serpent or a jaguar. Accordingly, if such an accident happened to him, it was sure to entail the punishment, and often the death, of the woman, whether she was innocent or guilty. An Aleutian hunter of sea otters thinks that he cannot kill a single animal if during his absence from home his wife should be unfaithful or his sister unchaste. The Huichol Indians of Mexico treat as a demigod a species of cactus which throws the eater into a state of ecstasy. The plant does not grow in their country, and has to be fetched every year by men who make a journey of 43 days for the purpose. Meanwhile, the wives at home contribute to the safety of their absent husbands by never walking fast, much less running, while the men are on the road. They also do their best to ensure the benefits which, in the shape of rain, good crops, and so forth, are expected to flow from the sacred mission. With this intention, they subject themselves to severe restrictions like those imposed upon their husbands. During the whole of the time which elapses till the festival of the cactus is held, neither party washes except on certain occasions, and then only with water brought from the distant country where the holy plant grows. They also fast much, eat no salt, and are bound to strict continence. Anyone who breaks this law is punished with illness, and, moreover, jeopardizes the result which all are striving for. Health, luck, and life are to be gained by gathering the cactus, the gourd of the god of fire. But inasmuch as the pure fire cannot benefit the impure, men and women must not only remain chaste for the time being, but must also purge themselves from the taint of past sin. Hence 4 days after the men have started, the women gather and confess to Grandfather Fire with what men they have been in love from childhood till now. They may not omit a single one, for if they did so the men would not find a single cactus. So to refresh their memories, each one prepares a string with as many knots as she has had lovers. This she brings to the temple, and, standing before the fire, she mentions aloud all the men she has scored on her string, name after name. Having ended her confession, she throws this string into the fire, and when the god has consumed it in his pure flame, her sins are forgiven her and she departs in peace. From now on, the women are averse even to letting men pass near them. The cactus seekers themselves make in like manner a clean breast of all their frailties. For every peccadillo they tie a knot on a string, and after they have talked to all the five winds, they deliver the rosary of their sins to the leader, who burns it in the fire. Many of the indigenous tribes of Sarawak are firmly persuaded that were the wives to commit adultery while their husbands are searching for camphor in the jungle, the camphor obtained by the men would evaporate. Husbands can discover, by certain knots in the tree, when the wives are unfaithful. And it is said that in former days many women were killed by jealous husbands on no better evidence than that of these knots. Further, the wives dare not touch a comb while their husbands are away collecting the camphor. For if they did so, the interstices between the fibers of the tree, instead of being filled with the precious crystals, would be empty like the spaces between the teeth of a comb. In the Kei Islands, to the southwest of New Guinea, as soon as a vessel that is about to sail for a distant port has been launched, the part of the beach on which it lay is covered as speedily as possible with palm branches, and becomes sacred. No one may thenceforth cross that spot till the ship comes home. To cross it sooner would cause the vessel to perish. Moreover, all the time that the voyage lasts, 3 or 4 young girls, specially chosen for the duty, are supposed to remain in sympathetic connection with the mariners and to contribute by their behavior to the safety and success of the voyage. On no account, except for the most necessary purpose, may they quit the room that has been assigned to them. More than that, so long as the vessel is believed to be at sea, they must remain absolutely motionless, crouched on their mats with their hands clasped between their knees. They may not turn their heads to the left or to the right or make any other movement whatsoever. If they did, it would cause the boat to pitch and toss. And they may not eat any sticky stuff, such as rice boiled in coconut milk, for the stickiness of the food would clog the passage of the boat through the water. When the sailors are supposed to have reached their destination, the strictness of these rules is somewhat relaxed. But during the whole time that the voyage lasts, the girls are forbidden to eat fish which have sharp bones or stings, such as the stingray, lest their friends at sea should be involved in sharp, stinging trouble. Where beliefs like these prevail as to the sympathetic connection between friends at a distance, we need not wonder that above everything else war, with its stern yet stirring appeal to some of the deepest and tenderest of human emotions, should quicken in the anxious relations left behind a desire to turn the sympathetic bond to the utmost account for the benefit of the dear ones who may at any moment be fighting and dying far away. Hence, to secure an end so natural and laudable, friends at home are apt to resort to devices which will strike us as pathetic or ludicrous, according as we consider their object or the means adopted to effect it. Thus, in some districts of Borneo, when a Dayak is out head hunting, his wife or, if he is unmarried, his sister must wear a sword day and night in order that he may always be thinking of his weapons. And she may not sleep during the day nor go to bed before 2 in the morning, lest her husband or brother should thereby be surprised in his sleep by an enemy. Among the sea Dayaks of Banting and Sarawak, the women strictly observe an elaborate code of rules while the men are away fighting. Some of the rules are negative and some are positive, but all alike are based on the principles of magical homeopathy and telepathy. Amongst them are the following. The women must wake very early in the morning and open the windows as soon as it is light. Otherwise their absent husbands will oversleep themselves. The women may not oil their hair, or the men will slip. The women may neither sleep nor doze by day, or the men will be drowsy on the march. The women must cook and scatter popcorn on the veranda every morning. So will the men be agile in their movements. The rooms must be kept very tidy, all boxes being placed near the walls. For if anyone were to stumble over them, the absent husbands would fall and be at the mercy of the foe. At every meal a little rice must be left in the pot and put aside. So will the men far away always have something to eat and need never go hungry. On no account may the women sit at the loom till their legs grow cramped, otherwise their husbands will likewise be stiff in their joints and unable to rise up quickly or to run away from the foe. So in order to keep their husbands' joints supple, the women often vary their labors at the loom by walking up and down the veranda. Further, they may not cover up their faces, or the men would not to be able to find their way through the tall grass or jungle. Again, the women may not sew with a needle, or the men will tread on the sharp spikes set by the enemy in the path. Should a wife prove unfaithful while her husband is away, he will lose his life in the enemy's country. Some years ago all these rules and more were observed by the women of Banting, while their husbands were fighting for the English against rebels. But alas! These tender precautions availed them little. For many a man, whose faithful wife was keeping watch and ward for him at home, found a soldier's grave. In the island of Timor, while war is being waged, the high priest never quits the temple. His food is brought to him or cooked inside. Day and night he must keep the fire burning, for if he were to let it die out, disaster would befall the warriors and would continue so long as the hearth was cold. Moreover, he must drink only hot water during the time the army is absent. For every draught of cold water would damp the spirits of the people, so that they could not vanquish the enemy. In the Kei Islands, when the warriors have departed, The women return indoors and bring out certain baskets containing fruits and stones. These fruits and stones they anoint and place on a board, murmuring as they do so, "O Lord Sun, Moon, let the bullets rebound from our husbands, brothers, betrothed, and other relations, just as raindrops rebound from these objects which are smeared with oil." As soon as the first shot is heard, the baskets are put aside, and the women, seizing their fans, rush out of the houses. Then, waving their fans in the direction of the enemy, they run through the village, while they sing, "O golden fans, let our bullets hit, and those of the enemy miss." In this custom, the ceremony of anointing stones, in order that the bullets may recoil from the men like raindrops from the stones, is a piece of pure homeopathic or imitative magic. But the prayer to the sun, that he will be pleased to give effect to the charm, is a religious and perhaps later addition. The waving of the fan seems to be a charm to direct the bullets towards or away from their mark, according as they are discharged from the guns of friends or foes. An old historian of Madagascar informs us that, while the men are at the wars, and until their return, the women and girls cease not day and night to dance, and neither lie down nor take food in their own houses. And although they are very voluptuously inclined, they would not for anything in the world have an intrigue with another man while their husband is at the war, believing firmly that if that happened, their husband would be either killed or wounded. They believe that by dancing they impart strength, courage, and good fortune to their husbands. Accordingly, during such times they give themselves no rest, and this custom they observe very religiously.